good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent has Christmas Day off, so we asked Aaron to come in and talk to us. Aaron Moore is our political pundit when we need
Let's just say it. I'm the person you get when you can't get anyone else.
Oh no, you're so much more.
So much more.
So it's just us heathens in the studio.
It is. Well, I mean, for me, it's not a matter of being a heathen.
No, you're just Jewish.
We celebrate Hanukkah by... NPR did this promo for a story they were going to do. What do you do when one person in your family, you know, the husband is Jewish and the wife is Christian, and you want to celebrate both holidays? Just what do you do when they fall on the same day? Well, if you want to celebrate everything that there is to celebrate about Hanukkah, do absolutely everything you have to do. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Asher Kishanu B'mitzvot Tofet, Tzivanu L'Hadlik Ner Shel. Hanukkah, light the damn candles. You're done. I think the Christian partner can give that person half a minute to fulfill the obligation. Right?
Well, I mean, you
they're doing a whole story on it.
It doesn't even involve putting up a tree.
It's just your Jewish consolation holiday. I mean, it's really a minor holiday, isn't it?
It's the most minor holiday on the calendar.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just to make you feel included in all of our Christianity here.
You know, it's only really been celebrated like as much as Christmas for the last 50 years since Jews moved to the suburbs and, you know, and we're living where everybody was celebrating Christmas, too, so to be included.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
I mean, I do like this whole eight-gift thing, though, right?
Do you know my family never did that?
Really?
Yeah, that's why I don't get eight gifts.
Yeah, and Brian's here in the studio. He said, yeah, that's why I don't get eight gifts.
Well, Brian's being our Grinch today.
So, Washington Post had an interesting story.
Can you give him a microphone?
No.
Okay.
Because he'll use it. The Washington Post had a story today, and it was titled, and I wish I had brought a copy of it, and I didn't, but it was called What We Can Learn from Hanukkah. Now, the story of Hanukkah begins about the year 175 B.C., and there was a new Assyrian emperor who had come to power. His name is Antiochus, and the Hanukkah part of it is just a small rebellion. That was the rebellion in the province of Judea, which is basically the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And the rebellion was against Antiochus because he had become a tyrant. He used his position for personal gain. He sold positions to officials who paid him the most. If somebody came along and paid him more, he replaced them with that person. He pitted one against the other. And they're just...
They didn't
make any conclusions. They just said, can we learn something from Hanukkah?
It's a good story.
So discuss. Can we learn something from that story of Hanukkah?
You know, I gotta say, we've been watching... I've been sick the last few days, and I'm just getting over it. So, you know, this could be a fun show with me on medication. But... we've been watching a lot of movies, and some of these, like, apocryphal, oh my god, worst case scenario movies, we're going, we're doing that now. This is not so worst case. It's kind of reality. I'm scared now. Mm-hmm. You know, and the most striking one, one of my favorites is V for Vendetta that I watched on a plane trip about it. It's kind of this dystopian society, you know, I'm losing my oligarchy words, but they make everybody scared so they can take over the world kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then two or three days ago, Patty and I watched a movie called The Siege, which I was expecting an action flick, and it turns out it's like ramping up Muslim fear, and it's pre 9/11. Mm-hmm. It was after the World Trade Center bombing, but pre 9/11 and Oklahoma City bombing. Yeah,
the first bombing.
Yeah,
in 96,
Oklahoma City bombing, but not the World Trade Center, the big one yet, the Twin Towers. So it was like, you know, rounding up all the Muslims and putting them in an internment camp, and, you know, even people that are working for the police are rounded up and all this. So I'm like, this is uncomfortably close to what we're looking at, especially with his registry and and talking about...
One thing my synagogue has decided, haven't we, Josh? If there's... Josh is president of the synagogue.
Okay. Congratulations.
If there is a Muslim registry, we're registering.
Oh, yeah. Everybody is, I think. I think we're all... And, you know, the one thing, you know, this has been an interesting year, to say the least, but one of the things that I think is different, and I really do hope it's different, I hope that our convictions don't crumble under pressure, is that everybody's in this together. I mean, people that don't think his way are in this together. Mm-hmm. And just what you said, you know, the Jews are going to register in the Muslim registry, or, you know, if they start coming after relationships or rights or things like that, I think that people are going to really step up en masse. You know, we're going to be walking together, I hope. Mm-hmm. I really hope that's the takeaway from all of this.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because we are in this together.
We are.
The idea that, and this is the most frightening thing that he's said so far, is the new nuclear arms race.
No, I know. In a tweet.
Let it be an arms race.
Yes.
That's what he said. And I'm like, wow, he's gleeful about this.
Well, and when you have leaders of the CIA saying, you know, that a foreign government has interfered in our election, and people like Joe Walsh, who is probably the rightest, wingest, crazy of them all, is saying, I don't understand why my side is not outraged by a foreign government interfering in our election. I mean, when I'm agreeing with him...
Because, you know, if you look at it very narrow, might not have helped Trump win. I mean, you know, there isn't clear... Okay, we know that votes were not moved. The election system itself is not on the Internet. There was nothing to hack there. But... just public opinion things that might have... Well, what if in 4 years Putin is not Trump's good buddy? What if in four years...
In 2 years?
The kind of man...
What's that going to be? Mm-hmm. And they've got all this stuff on us?
Mm-hmm.
The kind of man that should be president should resign. If the Russia helped him win, the kind of man that should be president should resign. Period. I mean, if best case scenario, he didn't know about it, he should resign. Worst case scenario, he knew about it, he should be in jail.
Encouraged it.
Yeah.
During the primaries, but during the election season, didn't he say something like, Russia, go hack
Hillary, yeah.
He says he was just joking.
There are some things you don't joke about.
Just kidding.
There are some things that we joked about before going on the air that we're not going to say on the air. Why don't we say those things on the air? Because there are some things that publicly you just don't joke about.
Well, I don't think we joke about anything inappropriate either, off air.
Well, he's making a point. But the point is, you're president. Things you say matter now,
mm-hmm.
good or ill. Things you say matter now. And if you can't be adult enough to not throw a hissy fit every time somebody contradicts you or disagrees with you or even agrees with you in a different way. I've seen that happening, too. I'm like, you can't win at any cost, because at any cost is this nation now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not Trump's ego. And... I've been saying this since the election, and I really hope I'm right, but I'm still guessing a 2-year presidency, because I don't think his ego is going to let him not do what he's been doing before the inauguration.
So what do you think? Let's make our New Year's predictions.
Okay.
He'll be inaugurated?
Yes.
January 20th?
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen before then, particularly, that will prevent that?
Well, I think there will be things that will happen before that, but they're not as illegal until he's inaugurated.
Oh, I you know, today he announced, or it was announced in the paper, that he's closing his foundation.
Yeah. He can't.
Why not?
According to the New York Attorney General, he can't, because it's under investigation.
Oh, so he can't
for
just...
fraud. Yeah, he can't dissolve it.
Well, and what I was going to say was, sure, they're going to dissolve it because it's under investigation for fraud. It never gave out any of this money that it claimed anyway.
He was using other people's money to buy portraits of himself and
right.
to pay off fines that his businesses incurred that were violations of law. Mm-hmm. His companies were fined, and he took the money out of the foundation to pay fines that the company should have paid out of their profits or their assets.
So when we call it the Trump Foundation, it's a foundation for Trump, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It's a foundation that he founded.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's Trump keeps the money.
I'm sensing a pattern, though. Anytime there's something that should be done, and I mean should be done in either a tradition or the law. No, I'm not going to do that. No. Rail. Rally, people. Get them all worked up, and then, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that. But his first reaction is, you can't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
you're not the boss of me.
I'm the boss. I'm in charge now.
He's the decider.
No, he hasn't said that yet.
And he thinks the laws don't apply to him. He's already said the famous Nixon thing.
But at least,
where if the president does it, it's not a conflict of interest.
I'm the decider. What is that saying? You can tell me something. And then from all of that information,
right.
I decide what's going to happen. God, I'm quoting George Bush and calling him
rational,
sane, and qualified.
This new normal is messed up, dude. Like I said, when I'm agreeing with Sarah Palin and Joe Walsh,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when they're like saying things I can go, yeah, because she called his cabinet the epitome of cronyism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it. I'm like,
I guess she's not going to get interior then.
No, probably not. But and he's picking his cabinet on how they look. Have you read that? Mm-hmm. That he rejected somebody because he was too short.
Corker,
yeah.
Corker for state.
You're not casting a show.
Well, and he
you're
said
really not casting
the main reason he was considering Mitt Romney is because he looked like Secretary of State, and it's interesting. Who does Tillerson,
Rex
Tillerson, the CEO of Exxon, who does he look like most? Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
I mean, side by side, it's not an identical face,
yeah.
But same stature, same presence. You know, for
less
state
experience, ties with Russia.
Oh, Rex Tillerson's never even had a job except at Exxon.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not worked at an A&P grocery store. He's not... like, you know, bus tables. He's never even had a job except at ExxonMobil.
No.
So he doesn't even know how another company runs, really.
No, here's...
there's just one more company.
But he knows how to navigate airports, and he's traveled a lot, so that qualifies him to be Secretary of State. But anyway, back to my prediction.
Well, it does, in that Exxon has its own foreign policy that contradicts...
and billions of dollars invested in foreign oil.
Yeah. But we can get back to that later.
Okay, my prediction, 2 years. I really think that this guy is pathological. I mean, I think there's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he cannot help himself. There is no shift to being more presidential. There is no shift to inclusion. There is no shift to anything that doesn't focus on him. And I think that's going to get him impeached. And if at the very least impeached, and at the very most he'll, or at the very least he'll resign, and at the very most he'll be impeached and indicted on something. And I think they're going to turn it over to Pence. For 2 years, which may have been the plan all along, frankly.
Who knows?
I
think actually you're saying the plan. I think his election took Republicans by as much shock as Democrats.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think most Republicans were. Even on election night until about 10 o'clock at night, I don't think they were going to their election parties saying, okay, it's going to be a tight one, but I think we can pull this out.
He won by the lowest common denominator, and nobody, including his own party, you're right, I think wanted him to win, but he is there.
He won by the lowest margin.
Right.
Not the lowest. They were actually two lower than him in the history of presidential elections in terms of popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't win the popular vote at all. And Hillary won the most out of any, 2.9 million more people.
Of any that
right.
lost
and
the
election. And
he's
like number 13 of all 54, 58 presidential elections we've had. in terms of the Electoral College. So he doesn't even have any sort of landslide.
No, he's just saying mandate.
Wisconsin,
landslide.
Michigan, and Pennsylvania, the spread's about 80,000 across all three.
There's one category that he has a majority, and that's in counties. If you count how many counties voted for him, it's a massive number of counties. Mm-hmm. Now, that includes counties like Loving County with 100 people in it here in Texas, and lots of counties like that. And the argument that's being used to justify the Electoral College's win is that, well, this way, you know, a state like Wyoming has to be considered with equality to Texas and California and New York. And that's very untrue. Every vote in Wyoming counts four times as much as every vote in California.
Sure,
right.
What's the fairness in that?
It's not. It's one person has more than one vote.
If you're in a small state.
So I'm going to squeeze in this this quote from Plutarch from like 75 A.D. And he's a Greek philosopher. The abuse of buying and selling votes crept in, and money began to play an important part in determining elections. Later on, this process of corruption spread to the law courts, and then to the army, and finally the republic was subjected to the rule of emperors.
And Rome fell.
Why don't we take our break there? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Aaron Moore.
Can I say Jews have delicious chocolate?
You had some Hanukkah gelt.
I did. Oh. The gelt is good.
I'm glad you had good gelt. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Rawlins Gilliland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
Hi. And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3. That was our friend Rawlins Gilliland, and
he's darn glad to be here.
He is, and we love Rawlins. We need to get him back on again.
Merry Christmas, Rawlins.
He's awesome.
We're talking a little bit about the past year.
We're trying to talk about the year in review, and we wound up talking about Trump.
About the year coming up. And just what our predictions are. Okay, so, Aaron, you think it'll be a two-year presidency, that something's going to happen. You know, anything from the Trump Foundation, which he announced today he's closing. They can cease operations, I guess. They just can't close,
To cease and desist any sort of operation at all. That was a couple of months ago.
But
that was before the election. Didn't seem to impact anybody.
And I can't remember, and I hesitate to even bring this up because I can't remember who said it, but somebody who is like high up in government said that Trump is already impeachable. I mean, just before he ever takes office, things he's done is already impeachable. So, I mean, I really can't see him lasting 2 years without something coming at him. And you're right. I don't think his own party wants him.
I think his wife has the right idea. It's just a little phase he's going through. I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to bother moving. Then have to move back. What's your prediction, though, Petty?
I think he's going to be overwhelmingly impeachable. Like, it's going to shame the GOP in Congress, in both chambers, to the point that they have to act, because he's going to violate the Emoluments Clause bigly and pretty proudly and openly. And the Emoluments Clause of the United States Constitution says that you can't take money from foreign people or foreign governments. And everybody staying at the D.C. hotel of Trump's down the street from the White House, he's had a whole convention of people from Kuwait or one of the Middle East countries that moved over to the Trump hotel in order to have their convention. And that's money in his pocket, and there's no denying that. And so he has no intention, apparently, of dissolving anything that with regard to his conflicts of interest. He's spoken only of the foundation, which is kind of boxed in because it's under investigation. So he's going to violate the Emoluments Clause at 12:01 p.m. January 20th, 2017. That's done. It's like Aaron said. He's been violating it all along, and so and here's the other problem that I see is that he's in debt. One reporter said $738 million. To foreign interests. He owes people outside our country $738 million. A big chunk of that to Deutsche Bank, $400 and something million. This is bribeability. There were days in the past when homosexual people could not serve in government.
Couldn't get a clearance.
And get a national security clearance because we were alleged to be bribable. And it's because some other party could bribe us and get us to do treasonous things.
If you were ashamed of your homosexuality.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there was such shame in it. This man has is obligated in very big ways, and I don't know why they haven't called in the loans, in very big ways to major, major foreign nations. He knows those nations. And if he's not bribable, I don't know who is. This guy is just amazingly at risk. And that's our country. That's our country. We have treason waiting to happen. On every front, it's not like he's got just one conflict of interest. He's got untold ones because he won't release his taxes. Mm-hmm. We don't even know how many he has. The Trump Corporation is a private entity, so it's not even on the stock market. So shareholders don't get reports. We don't know. We don't know.
Did you see where his sons were selling access to him?
Yes, based on two guys in Dallas.
Yeah, you could buy time with the president for $100,000. I think you got 15 minutes or something.
And they had to explain and hammer it into him why that was a conflict of interest.
Right, right.
And he's even tweeted about why that, how awful that is. You know.
Well, when Hillary was doing it.
How awful it is when that his kids not going to be able to raise money for these sick children now.
Yeah.
You know, and how awful that is. And I'm like, no, it's a freaking conflict of interest.
But when they were talking about when they were talking about access to Bill Clinton.
Oh, and, right.
And, you know, that was terrible. If a foreign government is making a donation to the Clinton Foundation so that the Clinton Foundation can buy vaccines and medicines for people overseas, which is all that foundation does. You know, if you want to talk about foundations and compare foundations, the Clinton Foundation actually takes that money and spends it, and they spend it on vaccines and medication overseas.
And they have very explicit annual reports. Mm-hmm. You can see the flow of money. But even if it were the same, she's not president elect. He's president elect. And this is egregious. Mm-hmm. So I give him, within a year, there's going to be enormous pressure on the GOP in the Senate and in the House to take action against him because he's violating the Constitution. I was telling Aaron before the show that I think Scalia would be mortified.
Now we could use Scalia.
Yeah, right. We need a constructionalist right now.
I mean, I think he would be absolutely mortified at not only Trump winning, but what he's doing.
What
he's intending to do. I think he would just scream. He's probably rolling over in his grave.
Trump is a Rorschach. I mean, Trump is...
I do need to point out something. This is the first time, Patty, on the air in 16 years... on Lambda Weekly, every single week, has said something nice about Antonin Scalia. Just wanted to point that out.
Okay.
I said something nice about George W. Bush.
I said something nice about Sarah Palin.
Yeah,
who I think actually set the stage for this Yahoo to get elected. But she, at least, is sounding reasonable now, which should tell you how bad things are. And now you've made me lose my point. But, the Rorschach. I think Trump is a Rorschach. He is all things to all people right now. You know, if I voted for him, well, he's going to lower taxes. Or if I voted for him, well, he's going to restore the coal industry. Well, if I voted for him, he can be whatever he wants to be because he doesn't stand for anything. So we're saying people that voted for him can say things like, oh, well, he'll do this for us because he came here and he listened to us and, you know, we're this. And I think once he gets in office, he can't remember what he tweeted the previous day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said something, and again, the drugs, sorry, but he said something and then the very next day they asked him about it and he said, well, who said that? He said, you did yesterday. That's scary.
Well, he doesn't always do all the tweeting. He admitted he calls them across the room to somebody. Who then actually types it in.
Okay, still scary. If you're... I mean, no less scary. It's just
what the scary that the president would have an employee, the secretary of tweeting.
No, he's got a director of social. He's got a White House advisor who's the director of social media.
We've had idiots as presidents before. This is not new. What's new is the reach and level of his idiocracy. And people willing, Paul Ryan, Ted Cruz, John McCain even, people willing to say at any cost that this is okay so they can stay in power. And I don't know that that's that new either. I mean, you know, if you read your history, but it never ends well. Well, and it's going to be painful.
Ryan said yesterday that he was going to maybe impose fines upon people, in sitting members of Congress in the House, if they basically raised too much ruckus about Trump.
I mean, how do you find some? Where does that law come from?
I don't know. I'm eager to read up more about it. But this is really, really alarming.
Yeah.
To me.
Since when is Ryan Trump's big ally? He's the one who refused to endorse him for.
Right. Well, and
I think what he sees is a tsunami of objection against everyone.
He wouldn't
nominees.
Be saying it if.
Right.
If it wasn't a serious threat.
Right. Well, right. I think Patty's actually right. I think, you know, getting some of these nominations through Congress is going to be interesting, at the very least. And I think that he's trying to tamp some of that down. But why do that? Why tamp it down? Let it be the circus that it's going to be, you know, but they still have to govern, which I guess is his point. You know, if he's in charge of this House, you know, what is he exactly in charge of if he can't govern in any meaningful way? So that may be what he's trying to do, but they're making stuff up. They're making stuff up as they go. There's no laws that apply here.
Well, and even Trump's voters are crazy about, they're going crazy about some of the stuff that they're beginning to realize, and it's beginning to sink in. It was the Washington Post, I believe, maybe the New York Times. The Washington Post did a feature on Trump voters who are now kind of realizing, and they spoke with a Trump voter in Appalachia who was doing as a coal miner, who's had Obamacare, has had policy, health care policy, affordable through the Affordable Care Act, and says, "Well, I didn't believe he'd really cut it."
Well, there was another one that I read like that.
You can't do that. You can't take away my health insurance. Trump, please do not take away my health insurance.
There was another one that I read like that where the person is going through chemotherapy, voted for Trump, and now is saying, oh, well, I didn't think he was serious about the Affordable Care Act. How many times did Congress vote to repeal it? The Republicans in Congress voted to repeal it, and the only reason it didn't get repealed is because Obama vetoed. How much attention can you not pay?
Well, it's this whole taking Trump seriously but not literally, or literally but not seriously, or figuratively but not comically, or comically but not, you know, if you parse that down, just going back to my Rorschach, he can be all things to all people. Oh, well, I don't think he'd do that to me. Well, he's not doing it to you. He's doing it to the country. And he's doing whatever he wants to do. And if you can't believe, you can't trust, if you can't verify, if you can't react to what the President of the United States is saying in any way, because it may or may not be true, what kind of check and balance is that setting up? You know?
And that's exactly
I didn't mean it.
That's exactly what a pundit
said.
You
didn't mean it.
Weeks before the election was that journalists take him literally but not seriously. And his voters take him seriously but not literally. And so obviously this voter who didn't want to lose her health insurance didn't take him literally when he said he was going to repeal and replace. And now that he's about to take office, and that's another thing that's really bothered me this last month, is people calling him president. He's not president. The president of the United States is Barack Obama.
Still Barack Obama, yeah.
He is president-elect. Trump is president-elect. And I wish they would keep those things proper.
Well, it was a long time before they even started calling Barack Obama president. You remember that? I mean, it was at least a couple of years before they quit saying Mr. Obama. No, he's the president, and you will call him the president, because it was still that whole invalidation thing.
And he's still doing it now. And it's a whole other topic to talk about how he's undercutting President Obama's foreign policy right now. You know, calling the Taiwanese president without even consulting the Department of State over China. And, you know, all of these things he's been doing, the you know, consulting with Netanyahu without talking to the State Department, without talking to the President of the United States. I mean, it's undermining him. It's completely undermining him. It's gaslighting everybody. He's gaslighting the entire country.
He's going to get us into a war before we turn around. An unnecessary war. You know, not that any war is necessary, but it's just from being dumb.
Well, but the thing is, he knows better than the generals. And that's right. A quote.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. And he's not getting the briefings because if anything changes, somebody will tell me.
Yeah, at the briefings. Quote. It's called the briefings.
The daily briefings he is not getting. So he's trying to make decisions on things he thinks are happening, not things he knows are
Because he knows better.
Right.
He knows better than our security agencies, than the military.
That's exactly the op-ed writers this week had a great piece that was terrifying about the thought process and decision-making process that he takes. And they contrasted that with President Obama. And President Obama says that he doesn't make trivial decisions. He hires people lower than him to make those decisions, and they are empowered to make those decisions. Every decision that he gets is consequential. There may be lives at stake. People may lose their lives based on what he decides right now. And he said he doesn't even, for the last 8 years, he doesn't even own anything except black suits and blue suits. Because he doesn't even want to waste time and energy deciding what to wear every day. Because he reserves all of his focus for those decisions that make it to him. And pulling in the experts and educating himself so that he can make a good decision on areas that he doesn't know about. And then, you know, relying upon his knowledge and experience to contribute to that. Well, Trump doesn't have any experience, zero. You know, big fat zilch, zip nada. And doesn't believe other people. He's intimidated by people who have any knowledge, so he's not going to pull them in.
Right.
And so he's not going to even consult anybody. And he's going to be so obsessed with things. Watch how he attacks Saturday Night Live.
And Vanity Fair.
He won't take his intelligence, his daily intelligence briefings because he's too smart. And the pundit said, the writer of the op-ed said, who says these things? I have a good brain. I have a great brain.
I'm so good.
I know more than the generals. Who says that? Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a stitch
Josh
of humility.
Josh.
People casting a reality show.
But there's no rhyme or reason to it. And so he's not his decision-making process is horrific. It's just terrifying. So he does it on a whim. If he's incredibly insecure, as much as he blathers on, he's an incredibly insecure man. Mm-hmm. No man who is insecure in his masculinity, in his abilities, in his intelligence. Anyone who's a man who's secure about himself does not behave this way.
You know, a good example of exactly what you're saying is the Taiwan phone call. For the short term, short run, does it make sense? Foreign leader calls. Or he called because it's a question as to who called who. Doesn't matter. Contact the head of Taiwan. But we're selling the military equipment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's going to end.
Yeah. Right.
Without taking into consideration all the layers and layers of policy that have gone on in that gentle, delicate balance. You know, there are contacts between mainland China and Taiwan.
Sure.
In fact, when I was in Hong Kong, we were getting on a flight for China, and just because of the way their policy worked, we almost ended up in Taiwan because of the way the airport is marked. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go from Beijing to Taiwan, you have to fly through, maybe they've changed that now, but you have to fly through Hong Kong, which is kind of semi-autonomous, but it's not. And that's kind of what they'd like Taiwan to actually be, too. And as long as we recognize it with that odd, delicate balance, it's fine. But there seems to be no understanding of He's chosen years and years and years.
He's chosen his attorney from Trump Organization. His chief attorney is going to be negotiating diplomatic and trade deals. This is the guy who has no experience in any sort of diplomacy. His lawyer certainly does not. They don't even register.
Is that his trade representative?
What?
Is that his trade representative or just an attorney working with the trade rep?
Oh, it's the whole trade representative organization. Oh,
okay.
There's been this. It's been really nuts. There's been this Republican trope for years and years and years and years and years, and I think since Reagan, that the government should be run like a business. Government should be run like a business. Well, now we have a government that's about to be run like a business, and I think everybody's going to freaking hate it. Because it's like, you can get fired at the whim.
He can't fire citizens.
Well, but he can fire his staff. I mean, look at his campaign staff. He was firing them left and right until he got one that agreed with them.
And he offered the position of director of communications, White House director of communications, to Jason Miller, who promptly resigned from the Trump Organization and declined the position. And I love the tweet yesterday that somebody says he's leaving to spend more time with his families. Because he impregnated another staffer.
Well, there's a Greek...
He has two families now. He said he's the GOP's equivalent of John Edwards.
There's a Greek term for this, and Cleve Jones found it and posted it on Facebook, and it's kakistocracy, which is government under the control of the nation's worst or least qualified citizens. And if ever there was a word to make new again,
Kakistocracy.
K-A-K-I-S-T-O-C-R-A-C-Y. There's your vocabulary word for the day.
We need to take a break. That's Aaron Moore, our regular political pundit who comes by at appropriate times to help us parse the political situation.
I'm the substitute teacher.
Which is what we do on Christmas Day.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this real quickie break.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly.
Hey, Valletta.
Some good things did happen this year. They were kind of symbolic. Eric Fanning, first openly gay director of the Army.
What is the Army
position called? But not director.
He is
Secretary of the Army.
First openly gay secretary of any U.S. military branch.
They launched the USNS Harvey Milk, U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk.
Yes,
which is
named the ship after Harvey.
Yeah, very symbolic. Mm-hmm. Named it after my school's most famous alum.
Jewish. Did you from New York? Imagine that.
Where did Patty go? Baylor. By the way, my school was down here in Dallas this week playing SMU. First time they've traveled this far. Mostly they just play East Coast. It is Division I team.
What do they think of
Dallas? People from the Alumni Association, they had a great time when they were here. We had a ball. There were like 30, 40 of us cheering for Albany and about 10,000 of them cheering for SMU. It was a good game till about the last 7 minutes. Then SMU just pulled ahead and they won by 18 points, something like that.
So
I said, well, you know, come down. And people had come in from around the state for this game who were Albany alums. So I said, we played the SMU Mustangs. Are we going to play the Baylor Rapists?
true sports ball story. We went to New Orleans last weekend for Christmas, and I had to spend some time with Patty's sister, and we were on the shuttle bus, and these guys were from Baylor, and Patty was wearing her Baylor sweatshirt, so they started from Waco. Patty was wearing her Baylor sweatshirt, so they started talking. She said, I'm kind of ashamed of my school right now, referring to the sexual harassment scandal.
Well, the sexual assault.
Assault scandal.
With dozens and dozens of women who've been raped.
And they thought she was talking about their performance as a sports team.
Oh, it was a... surreal.
And it was, I'm just sitting there listening to this, and they were both speaking in such high generalities that you could interpret it to be either way. Oh, man, well, somebody needs to get fired, and somebody needs to take accountability for this, says Patty. And
they said, well, you can fire some of the regents. Mm-hmm. And they said, that'd be okay, too.
Yeah. So they were hearing the conversation they wanted to hear, and Patty was having the conversation.
We get in the car, and Aaron goes, I don't think they were talking about
I think you were
the sexual assaults that took place on campus. I think they're just talking about the sports.
So like, anyway.
Really? Well, yeah. Wow.
Anyway, so people from our alumni association were down, the athletic director
as well.
No, but no, this goes back to you. So I was telling them about Baylor, and Baylor having actually sued the LGBT Alumni Association for using the name Baylor in their name. She said, what?
Yeah.
She said, our LGBT Alumni Association, we're having a big campus event. I hope you can come up for it. And she said, it's growing so rapidly. She said, but the job of the Alumni Association is to raise money for the school. What does Baylor's do? And I said, well, that was going to be the goal. But they didn't want gay money.
We don't want gay money.
And, you know, they call for money quite often, and I've listened to their whole spiel, take up as much time of their time as I possibly can, and then say, you know, I'd give you a lot of money, but here's why I don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some other good things that happened last year, but some of the more tragic things that I really fear are going to get pushed aside because of the whole Trump debacle. I mean, I really don't want to see us forget to commemorate, to remember, to have action about the Pulse nightclub shooting. You know, I mean, it's the largest mass shooting in American history, and it's just kind of gotten asterisked, which is making me mad about it. That happened too. Well, no. I mean, that should be the story.
That was one of
the
defining points of the year.
It absolutely was. And
it was in June. We weren't even at a first anniversary.
No, but even at the 6-month anniversary, when some people were trying to commemorate it, there was like some, it just felt like a side note to me. And that, this cannot turn into a side note. It just cannot.
It's the largest mass murder in the United States.
Right, right. I mean, if it had happened to any
By guns, I should say. There's 9/11. I don't want to. Sorry, I just have to correct my factoid.
Okay, let me interrupt here.
We're married.
And, you know, and 2 weeks.
I got the look.
2 or 3 weeks later was the Dallas police shooting.
Right.
Yep. The president was down here to speak for that.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, he was distraught. And he was just, you could tell from the way he spoke, he was at his wit's end about this thing. You know that he had spent a lot of time thinking about what can we do without infringing on people's gun rights. What are some sensible laws that Congress will seriously consider?
Yeah.
And his answer was not a single thing, because anything that I propose is going to be ignored. It's going to be
obstructed.
Anything and everything.
Yeah.
Because the gun lobby, just they're not interested in safe gun use. That is not what they're there for.
Right.
And black man in the White House.
And black man in the White House, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he should have suggested, no, we need to issue guns to everybody in the country. That's what he should have suggested, and they would have said, oh, we can't do that.
It's like that Fox News thing where they were just so stumped by the whole Merrick Garland nomination, and one of the Fox News people said, "You know what we really should do? This is so spooky that he would do this. What's he up to? What's he planning?"
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "She said maybe we should just they should just go ahead and approve him for the court and show him." Like there was some plan. Like there was
and the story behind that is, of course, that Orrin Hatch, the Republican senator from Utah, when they were talking to him a couple of weeks before the nomination was made, they said, well, who would you like to see? He said, well, you know, I'd approve it if it was somebody like Merrick Garland. And then all of a sudden, that's who Obama appoints. And, well, we can't have him.
Right.
Well, you just said that's who you would like to see.
Well, and now they're going to get some crony, you know, donating absolutely off the charts right wing nominee that I don't know.
We'll be screaming for Scalia.
Yeah, I know. We'll miss Scalia, which won't that be a surreal? I mean, the arch enemy of the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
But this just comes back to the point where we cannot normalize this stuff.
We cannot.
Absolutely cannot normalize this kind of behavior, because what we're going to be left with if we don't speak up every single itty-bitty thing. I mean, we're getting barraged by it now. It is a tsunami of crap coming our way, and how do you address all of it? I mean, I look at Facebook and I'm like, I don't even know what to post, you know, because there's not, as if I had time. I don't, like, pretty sporadic on Facebook, but, you know, what do you choose to go, oh my God, about? There's just so much.
Do you know
stuff.
What the one I picked with all the nominations for cabinet? I wrote a piece about how Rick Perry is probably the best choice he's made so far.
Saw that, yeah. We can't normalize it, but we also can't react to everything, because I think they're playing on the whole throw it all out there, get everybody twirled up. There's too much to react to. We'll get some of it by. I think we've got to react to the higher level. We've got to react to the man and to the criminal actionable items, because all of it's ridiculous and all of it is outrageous, and you can only stay in that state for so long. We've got to, you know, you can trim the tree all you want, but you got to cut the branch off at some point. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have people who have different opinions about different things and have different political positions on things, but to a point, the head of the EPA, somebody who's in the middle of a lawsuit against the EPA.
Who would love to see to dismantle the EPA.
The head of the Secretary of Energy, which is Perry, or the head of Energy, who appointed Secretary of Energy, is Rick Perry, who said he wants to abolish. Well, he would have said he wanted to abolish that agency if he could remember it.
Right.
But let's be real clear about that, too. James Rick Perry, also known as James R. Perry, is listed on the board of directors of Energy Transfer Partners. And Energy Transfer Partners, as many people know, are the ones pushing for the Dakota Pipeline.
Oh, you and your facts.
And the head of Energy Transfer Partners is Kelsey Warner, Warren, whose son is Clyde
Kelsey.
Warren.
It's Clyde, yeah.
Yeah.
Who they named the park after because he put up the money for it. So if you look at their website, it says James R. Perry. It says happened to be, you know, governor of Texas for 14 years or whatever. He's in on all that. He's knee-deep in all of that. And there he's been named nominee for Department of Energy. This is insane.
State Department Tillerson. Exxon bragged for years that they have their own foreign policy
right.
that is uh-huh. separate from U.S. foreign policy.
And billions of dollars invested in Russia. I mean, yeah, I mean, none of it.
Putin owns the largest oil company in Russia.
Yeah, so
Putin personally owns it.
Political cartoon about a match being appointed the Secretary of Haystacks. And if there's an anti, he's doing it. And
okay, here's another one, though. HUD. Mm-hmm. Somebody who said, well, I don't know how to run an agency.
Right.
How he was going to run for president right. and be president, I'm not sure. Big agency.
Oh, yeah.
This is just HUD. I don't know how to run an agency.
Right.
If Congress lets that go by.
Yeah.
Ben Carson.
Yeah. If Congress lets that go by, they're not doing their jobs. When he publicly made that statement and said it more than once, he doesn't know what he's doing. How do you. And this is not because I think he has a difference of a view than I have. It's because he said he doesn't know how to do the job. When was the last time in your company, Patty, they hired somebody because they didn't know how to do the job and said so on their interview?
Not any time.
I honestly think, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think Trump thinks this is funny. I think he thinks this is hysterical, and he wants to see what he can get away with. Instead of actually running a country, I don't think the weight of what he has done has hit him.
Obama has been extremely generous and tried to not say negative things, but you could tell, you know, kind of looking between the lines from what he said. First meeting, especially, he said you could tell that the weight of the world of Trump got it. Seemed to get it. He had no idea the magnitudinousness of what
bigly.
He was.
Say bigly.
How bigly it was. You're right. That's a good word because it comes out of the mouth easier, especially on a Sunday. And subsequent meetings, it seems as though Obama is, for you know, he's scared to death of what's coming.
Yeah.
But
Trump or
that Obama is scared to death of Trump because of the lack of knowledge and lack of,
and he probably has a firsthand view of just how stupid the guy is and unknowledgeable.
Anybody, and here's my outrage: the Republican Party should not be okay with this. If they believe what they run on, if they really believe what they run on, if they believe that they are the best party to run this government, then they should be as outraged as we are. We're worried about our rights and indignities and progress going backwards and all of this. They should be worried about their reputations and how their model of government is going to play out under this guy. And I have heard zero opposition from the Republican Party. And they should be up in arms and in the streets, frankly.
And one of the things that has been pointed out, I think, that may be at play here is many of them say, because there's a lot of Trump voters in polls say that, you know, they think Putin's just great.
Mm-hmm.
That Putin's white.
Putin's white.
Had it been Assad or Mugabe or Idi Amin or Gaddafi who was involved in our elections, maybe they would think differently. They'd probably be singing a different tune, but it's Putin, the white guy. And he's like, oh, well, we love Putin. I just American people.
Right.
You know, about invading our elections. But if somebody else had done it, what would they say?
Well,
I don't know.
And I don't know if we've finished making that point before. The reason that they should be up in arms, furious, not letting this happen is because it happened on one side this time. Next time it'll happen to them when this guy pisses off Putin or pisses off China or whoever else it is.
He's going to be blackmailed.
And that's going to make them lose next time, just as it made her lose this time, is the perception.
I really hope so. I mean, I used to say sort of flippantly, you can never go wrong overestimating the stupidity of the American voter. And boy, was I proved right this election. But it's what they can remember and what they can vote on. And I think it's all this, you know, blow it up and start over kind of stuff. Because they're frustrated with both parties. But what I'm not seeing is both parties reacting to it. I'm only seeing the Democrats reacting to it. And I think it's going to be bad if we don't find some common ground and get something done.
One good sign, CBS Morning News this morning said, you know, there were a whole bunch of people who were expecting to be very, very busy over the next 4 years running the country. They're going to be dedicating a lot of their time over the next couple of years to fixing the Democratic Party. So that's a positive sign. We'll see if it happens, but there's a lot of talent out there that was planning on being in the White House. One interesting statistic, and we only have a couple of minutes left, but interesting statistic, as soon as the election happened, enrollments in the ACA soared. It didn't happen, the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And as of about the middle of this week, enrollments are at a record high. We still have through January 31st for people to enroll. You had to have enrolled by the 16th, I think, in order to get coverage by January 1st. But if you enroll by January 31st, you will still be covered by March 1st. We're already at record levels. If that's what the first thing they're going to do, and they're promising, first day in session, that's what they're doing. They're repealing with not a plan to replace. None.
Yep. That's
no plan to replace all those things that that everybody likes. Gone as of January 1st, 2018.
And all those coal miners who voted for him are going to be the rug pulled out from under them because they're on the ACA and they like the ACA. It's the first time in years that they've had full coverage, healthcare coverage for themselves and their families. And what are they going to think? Are they really going to come back down to earth now and say, that's unacceptable, even though everything else has been acceptable so far.
Mm-hmm. So
we'll see.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just want to say a quick funny. We're driving over here, stopped at an intersection, and a whole bunch of leaves blew by, and Aaron goes, leaf crossing.
don't know why she thinks that's so funny, but
it was hysterical.
I want everybody, you know, it's this whole, we've gone from having hope to not having hope. And when I hear things like fixing the Democratic Party, I rankle a little bit because I don't think we're broken. I think we made some mistakes, but I don't think we're broken. And I don't want to see us fighting the last war. I think we're, you know, the Democratic Party, I think, is the party of compassion. And I think people were getting, that were getting disenfranchised, fought back. And I also don't want to underestimate that sentiment. But if anybody is truly a governing, thinking, rational, for the people and for their constituents elected official, everyone should be uniting
and
being nice to each other. We need to be nice to each other.
I just want to add, there are a lot of people calling for, we need to pay, as the Democrats, we need to pay more attention to white people, white working people. And this idea of we don't need to trade our civil rights and equality for and pit ourselves against working white people. That's not our case. So,
and one thing I've never done before on the air, I just have a message for somebody who's down in Venus, who's a new listener. I got the birthday card out with the gift certificate. He'll know what that means. He's listening. Patty, Merry Christmas. Aaron, it was nice to meet you. Thank you for coming on the show. Maybe you'll come again sometime. And for all of us at
Lambda
Weekly.
And happy Hanukkah, too.
And happy New Year next week. And we'll be back with more next week.